Good Friday. Today is May the 2nd, and you're listening to My Farm. Well, taking a look in the backyard and garden, we want to talk about ways to protect trees from insects and disease and the use of dormant oils, now known as horticultural oils, how they have changed over time, and what their applications might be. We'll have the details after this message from our sponsor.
Sponsored by Seed Consultants, simply the best value in the seed industry. Learn more at seedconsultants.com.
We're going to take some time this Friday morning as we look out in the backyard and garden, and some interesting questions I've been asked lately dealing with dormant oil sprays. And dormant oil sprays, a lot of folks have in their mind, that is something you can only use at certain times of the year. It might be something you apply to fruit trees or whatever when the trees are dormant, or even when insects are dormant, and that is a time that basically has run out now. Well, that's not true. We want to clarify some of the confusion. First of all, dormant oil. Traditionally, these oil sprays were derived from a paraffinic crude oil and were a heavyweight, more viscous, petroleum-based type oil spray. Now, initially, these contained various sulfonated residues, which could cause damage to foliage or green leaf tissue, which is why folks thought you can only spray them when that leaf matter is not out there, when the tree or plant is dormant. So again, they were only applied to deciduous plants, your trees and shrubs, specifically fruit and shade type trees during that dormant season when they weren't growing. Well, as oil refining processes and techniques improve, dormant oils could be more highly refined to create these superior oils, if you will. Another popular term is supreme oil. Superior oils were less viscous and contained a little to no sulfur residues compared to the dormant oils, and they were superior for use during the growing season when plants were in full leaf if they were mixed and used in the correct concentration. They're also called summer oils and again reflect the time of year when those were used. And again, these are used to control both insects and disease. All these oils now fall into a common term of horticulture oils. And horticulture oils are pesticides specifically designed to control plant insects, mites, and like I said, some diseases. They're commercially available, highly refined petroleum products that are filtered and distilled to remove any harmful compounds. They're 92 to 99% pure. And after the distillation and filtration process is finished, the oils are formulated with what's known as an emulsifier, and that allows them to mix and blend with water applications better than the old ones would. In addition, some of these products have moved away from petroleum-based and have plant-based horticultural oils. So it may be soybean oil, rosemary, cottonseed, sesame, and different other plant-type oils out there. So it's safer, again, and better for the environment. Plant-based horticultural oils are less refined. There may be a slight tendency where you could see a little bit of burn on the foliage, but typically it's not going to be anything that is overly harmful to the plant. Common brand names of these would be Sunspray or Ultrafine. Another plant-based oil is Garden Safe Neem Oil Extract. Now, you always want to read the label and follow the instructions. We say the label is the law, but it's also important to avoid any damage. Certain species of plants like arborvitae, beech trees, redbuds, even some of the maples, the Japanese maple, red sugar, and the amer, can be sensitive to dormant oil sprays applied to the branches or the trunks. And you also want to be aware of characteristics and prized needle colors and conifers. Colorado blue spruce, for example, can be discolored or change from blue to green following an oil application. Dormant oils are applied to the overall plant structure, specifically to the bark and all the cracks and crevices. The idea is it gets in, it coats, and it will suffocate any insects or mites or prevent, again, disease from spreading. So that's sort of the process of how it works. And as those insects or mites were going through overwintering life stages, it then blocks those breathing pores so they can't hatch out, and it causes disruption of their cell membrane. It's just an effective way, especially this time of year or going into the spring, to manage some of those pests before they emerge again. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more after this message from our sponsor.
Williamson Crop Insurance, home of Decision Max. Decision Max allows you a simple solution to analyze your operation and make informed marketing and crop insurance decisions to mitigate your risks. Manage your whole operation in one place with the ability to blend counties, marketing, and insurance coverage to give a complete overview of your operation. Williamson Crop Insurance, protecting the Eastern Corn Belt since 1980. Learn more at cropcoverage.com.
Thanks, Joe. We're going to change directions now. Talk a little bit about lawn care, as some lawn care practices and techniques may seem set in stone, but some extension experts say there's a little more flexibility than you think. USDA's Rod Bain has more.
So you have a lawn to take care of. Your home, sure. Perhaps you are a landscaper of a commercial or residential property. Maybe you are a groundskeeper for an outdoor athletic field or complex or golf course with turf. Why do you do what you do? It's a question Cornell University Extension's Carl Schimenti says anyone involved with lawn care should give thought to.
Lawns do require some thought. I know there's a lot of effort put into lawns, mowing a bunch and fertilizing and buying seed and stuff. But I'd encourage people to think a little bit about why they do those things.
What some lawn care managers, pros, or a single homeowner consider tradition may actually be dogma, according to Schimenti. Yet,
dogma can be a powerful factor in how we manage grass. It's not just lawns, it's golf courses and sports fields. And you can be conditioned to do things every year, like it's May 15th, I'm going to put my spring fertilizer out, or hey, I have to lime my lawn every single year.
But Schimenti asks, are your ritual lawn care practices needed, really? He says a lot depends on, well, a lot.
Climate is different every single year. The weather is different. The age of your turf grass changes over time. So you have to be a little bit more reactive than just saying, I'm going to fertilize at these three times of the year and I'm going to mow every Saturday.
One common dogma in lawn care involves thatching.
People have an idea that thatch, for those who may not understand, thatch is basically excess organic matter, all this root and shoot material right at the surface where the plant is basically growing too much. So a lot of people, they want to get rid of thatch.
Where the solution might not be dethatching, but reducing irrigation or fertilizer. So what are resources available to find out what your lawn or turf or field actually needs in the way of care? Abias Schimenti says looking up your local cooperative extension lawn expert is one of the first things you can do.
Usually it would be someone involved in horticulture. They'll steer you in the right direction. Some lawn maintenance practices. They're going to know the regional climate, the regional issues, the best varieties to use in those areas.
Some of the usual questions and requests extension experts receive about lawn care.
Turf grass ID of weeds, that's a common one we get. Folks always want a soil test, the chemical properties. That can be a good solution. Oftentimes, probably not the number one thing you would do, but these extension offices can do those sorts of tests and diagnostics for you.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. That's what's making agricultural news on my farm. For my 102.7 WMYW, I'm Dusty Sonnenberg. You have a great day.